Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Kimberly Atkins. Tonight, the Boston School Committee will vote to confirm the next superintendent of Boston Public Schools. It's been 2 weeks since the three finalists were announced. Last week, each finalist spent a day being interviewed in a public setting to allow for parent and community participation. WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin has joined us, and he's been following this story. He attended those interview sessions, and he's with us now. Hi, Max.
Hi, Kimberly.
So we've been hearing from community members that despite this process to try to make things more open and inclusive, they still feel frustrated that parents and stakeholders weren't made a part of this as they should have been. Can you explain that for a little bit?
Yeah, I think that charge was long in developing. There was some frustration months ago in the fall when African-American parents complained that there wasn't an independent black parent representative on the search committee. Then you had the citywide parent council, which is kind of the most venerable parents group in the city. And they said this process has been kind of rushed and that a lot of parents they spoke to didn't even know what was going on, let alone have time to make an informed decision.
And are you also hearing specific complaints about the process leading up to tomorrow's vote?
Yeah, I think this final
tonight's vote.
Yeah, tonight's vote. This final phase has frustrated people as well. You had I spoke to Lisa Green. She's an organizer with a new group called the Boston Coalition for Educational Equity, and she said you saw a distinct lack of multilingual, serious engagement and outreach in advance of these live stream public interviews last week. And then you sort of those came in pretty suddenly, mostly during the workday and just after school vacation when people were finally getting back into gear. And it resulted in a particular scene. Let's hear from her.
When you look at the interviews that were supposedly organized for parent and community engagement, each night you ended up with a handful of residents in the room and a sea of empty chairs. You know, so it's disappointing. BPS knows how to engage communities across the city. Yet in this most important decision, the city made a choice not to fully engage the community and not to create the conditions for working class families to participate.
Now, Kimberly, to be fair, I think the district did indeed like live stream those interviews. The press was there. I was there with a lot of other reporters. And the search process hasn't changed that much from the one they followed 4 or 5 years ago that surfaced the past superintendent, Tommy Chang. But I think it shows the gradual deterioration of trust in the district.
So as we mentioned, there are three finalists, and it seems that there is a public consensus sort of forming around one, Dr. Brenda Caselius. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I think Brenda Caselius feels like just what the doctor ordered to the people we've just described because, she sort of made her mark saying, I'm a communicator. She said, I'm skeptical of high-stakes testing. I want schools to be this kind of community port where families are connecting with housing and health services. And she just sold herself as a listener, I'd say, a team builder, someone who can listen to a lot of constituencies and synthesize their goals. And I spoke to some people who'd worked with Caselius in the past, and they say that's true. For instance, Denise Speck was the president of Minnesota's largest teachers union, where Caselius was the education commissioner until the start of this year. And she said Caselius worked really hard at that as she revised the state's plan for evaluating school quality.
And there are also negatives. Are there anything working against Caselius's bid?
There's one prominent negative in the sense that she's in the final round under consideration for the top education job in the state of Michigan. At the same time, they're planning to have their final vote in another week. Mm-hmm. And she irked some of the people there for failing to show up in person for her interview. Of course, she was either in or on her way to Boston at that point. But I think it's telling. She's had almost every job in education. She's been a paraprofessional, teacher, assistant principal, and commissioner, head of all state schools. But she hasn't been a big district superintendent. And I think there are some locals who say, we really wanted somebody who's done this job before and shown some success at it.
All right, let's take a look at the other two finalists. Marie Izquierdo, you can help me.
Izquierdo,
thank you for that. She had her interviews last Monday. She's the chief academic officer of Miami-Dade County Public Schools. What's jumped out about her to you?
Well, I think you saw Izquierdo's big district experience. Miami-Dade County Public Schools have about more than 350,000 students, much larger than Boston. And I think that experience shows she came into town really prepared, really confident. And she felt like the most business-minded of the three finalists. She was thinking about public education in terms of consumer choice, in terms of supply and demand. And I think you can hear that in this clip. Izquierdo's discussing all the children who live in Boston who choose to enroll in charter schools or private schools.
18,000 students, I believe, are choosing something other than BPS. You can only attract those kids back by having high-quality choice options within your BPS portfolio.
Now, Izquierdo then went on to recommend, quote, right-sizing the district, which would mean closing some schools, refocusing at the remaining schools to make them more high-quality, more rigorous, more cost-effective. And I think that speaks to Izquierdo's training. She was a fellow at what's called the Broad Academy last year. It's a program that educates people to become big district superintendents, and it's been criticized for having a kind of corporate curriculum. But then again, Kimberly, BPS has this longstanding budget deficit, and maybe that kind of business mindset would be appealing to some school committee members.
And Max, do you see any other weak spots for her?
Well, I think she might have come on a bit strong. Florida has been this very particular educational environment, kind of a hotbed of reform since at least back when Jeb Bush was governor. There's no cap on charter schools there. And I think Izquierdo might have taken for granted, that we all agree on things that might actually be massively controversial here in Boston, like closing schools, forming alliances with businesses, things like that.
And the third candidate, Oscar Santos, is the principal of Cathedral High in the South End and a longtime Boston area resident. How big of an advantage does he have being from the hometown?
A week ago, Kimberly, I would have told you it was a big advantage. Santos was on this big splashy Boston Herald front page with an op-ed about why he wanted the job. And then you've got the board of trustees at Cathedral, the school he runs, that's populated with some prominent, pretty influential Boston business leaders. So he seemed very well connected, and I thought that might give him an edge. But I do think people find his professional record to be a little more limited and more mixed in results than those of the other two finalists. People on the school committee, I guess, will have to decide what kind of experience matters to them. Do they want work experience or do they want the kind of Boston experience, familiarity with the city that can have kind of a steep learning curve?
Right. And that familiarity can be a benefit, as you pointed out, but it could also, familiarity sometimes can breed contempt. Is that going to be held against him?
I think that's an apt expression. People remember that students walked out of Cathedral just last year. They were protesting Santos's firing of a popular basketball coach, the lack of teacher diversity there. And in 2013, Santos signed on to a project that I think looks controversial in retrospect. It called for the elimination of the cap on charter schools. And that proposal was, listeners will remember, rejected pretty forcefully by voters back in 2016. And finally, there were people who thought he was a bit too hard charging during his 3-year tenure as the superintendent of Randolph Public Schools. I spoke to Anne Barish. She was a history and social studies coach when he arrived there. And she says Santos essentially eliminated her position as he tried to make over what was then a struggling school district.
Oscar's leadership style was abrasive, was blunt. He set people against one another. And again, in thinking about this, I think it came from him being green.
That's green as in inexperienced, Kimberly. Randolph was the only place where Santos had served in or has served in upper administration. And I want to be clear, two former school committee members there say Santos really needed to clean house, needed to be a bit tough in that district, and that there was a bit too much complacency, maybe patronage, too little oversight there.
And we know that the mayor, Marty Walsh, doesn't have an official role in the selection, but friction between Walsh and Superintendent Chang was a big factor in the departure. And Walsh does have the power to appoint the school committee members who will be making this decision. So any idea how much influence he has over all of this? And has he tipped his hand as to who he thinks is the best choice?
Yeah, it's interesting. Walsh has talked about this a little bit in the past couple of weeks. I think he would say he's sort of first among equals, Kimberly. He talks to the finalists. He talks to the school committee. He talks to trusted advisors. And then he forms an opinion that he kind of tells people about. And I don't think there's necessarily a problem with that. This is a district that for now is organized around mayoral control. Last time around, Walsh kind of went out of his way just a few hours before the vote to formally endorse Tommy Chang. Chang then won the vote a few hours later. Some people said, well, that was the mayor putting his finger on the scale. I think you see Walsh's influence this time around in more informal ways. You had all the candidates talking about the need to advocate for more state funding for city schools. That's really high on Walsh's political agenda this term. And most of them talked about a process he's overseeing, namely the restructuring and maybe the closing or consolidation of some schools.
And after hearing from all the candidates in just a few seconds we have left, is there any hint at who the favorite is?
I think, again, Kimberly, I might have said a week ago that Santos had the edge just because he was familiar. And there is a sense that Boston has been pretty rough on people who were coming from the outside. I think I probably did say he was the favorite on our air at some point. But now you've had multiple groups, you know, Latinos for Education supporting Izquierdo, Citywide Parents Council supporting Caselius. Not as big a profile, an endorsement of Santos. I think at this point, the vote's a few hours away. I think I'd be foolish to guess. You know, people who are interested can stay up and watch.
Okay, well, we'll be watching as well tonight. That's WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin. Max, thanks so much for the time and insight.
Thanks, Kimberly.